Strap yourself in and adjust your mirrors for maximum visibility. It's time for Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Make sure I've got the right channel up. Are you coming, Dr. Kirsten Zemke? Are you there?
Yes, I am. My voice is still husky, and I haven't warmed up, but all right, it'll get warmer as we talk about our awesome topic.
All right. Now, it is New Zealand Music Month, and you've chosen the topic of New Zealand protest songs.
Yeah, I had it on the list to do anyway because it's such a, you know, New Zealand music has had this really, you know, solid branch of, you know, it's pop music, right? And people like to have fun. But, you know, using music to sort of talk about issues. And surprisingly, the songs have been huge hits, you know. So, you know, so musicians sort of taking a chance and saying, look, you know, I'm going to talk about this serious issue because I feel like it. You know, how our audience is going to feel, you know, because it's pop music. And these have been hits, and they've really shaped New Zealand and how New Zealand is and thinks about themselves. And, you know, I mean, we're only playing three today, but, you know, there's probably about 20, 25 we could have played that, you know, that are all just sort of really iconic about who we are as New Zealanders through pop music, you know?
Now, we're kind of hitting the 80s.
A lot of them are, you're right.
This not on purpose, but they are all from the 80s. So
I know.
A big time of change in Aotearoa.
Yeah, and I guess people finding their voice through pop music. I mean, it was when New Zealand pop music was sort of developing, you know. Previously, you know, there had been sort of attempts at sort of 50s bands and 60s bands, you know, a lot of musicians working, but as far as, you know, really supporting New Zealand original music. So there was a big burst in the 80s where it sort of became itself. And part of that was the protest sound. But yeah, you're right. We ended up in the 80s, but it's a great era. This is the era when I moved to New Zealand too. So like, this is what I saw. Like the first track we're going to play, Blam Blam Blam, it came out in 1981. You know, I was a kid moving to New Zealand from America, and, you know, it was like this song, there is no depression in New Zealand, there are no sheep on our farm, and it has this sort of deadpan delivery, very sort of Kiwi, and I just thought it was the funniest song, you know, it's just nothing like what I was hearing on the radio in LA, which was, you know, disco and funk, and, you know, just so different.
It must have sounded alien. Now, what sort of issues are we responding to in the 80s, Dr. Kirsten Zemke?
I mean, lots of stuff about New Zealand's position in the world, and we're going to have a couple nuclear songs, the economy, the environment, and, you know, by depression, too, you know, it's, you know, it's there's economic depression, right? But there's also, you know, emotional and physiological depression.
This feels very strange to me, or not, also quite timely after yesterday's budget.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these songs are all timely. You know, we were talking about the 80s, but it's like none of these issues have actually changed.
Yes, still the same issues.
So talking about World War III, you know, the nuclear issue. And, I mean, amazing musicians that came through. So this was a little, you know, I don't want to say one-hit wonder. I think they had two or three hits. But the musicians all went on to, you know, amazing lives. You know, people shifting around in different bands. Like, you know, one of the members is Don McGlashan. I mean, they have to make a movie on him. He's been a part of so many musical projects. He wrote the song Anchor Me, the song Bathe in the River, you know, like he maintained all sorts of hits all through his life. Really great story. The bass player, Tim Mon, I know him, I've worked with him for years, and he identifies as an anarchist communist real estate agent in the North Shore. And the band's from the North Shore, they're from Westlake Boys.
Are there any particular protest songs in Aotearoa that have had a measurable impact on policy or public opinion or even national identity?
I think lots. I mean, I think this one definitely National Identity. I don't know if any of you have done English degrees. A lot of the literature that came through New Zealand is very depressing. You think about Janet Frame and stuff. And so this sort of encapsulates that same vibe of New Zealand Identity that, you know, yeah, we love New Zealand. It's a great place. But there's sort of isolation and sort of things behind closed doors that can still be really dark. And then many of the songs, you know, this one and the next one mention things like nuclear testing in the Pacific. So sort of protecting the region, you know, and I don't know if the songs made the change, but they were definitely representative of a large movement. If you get a song and a topic and it's so popular, you know, then the government, it's not like, oh, we're going to change because of the song, but they're recognizing, wow, we're losing the tide of public opinion. Mm. So it's sort of this sort of broader measure for them instead of, you know, let's take surveys. How do people feel about this? Oh my God, this song's been in the charts for 18 weeks. That's how people feel about it.
Now, I guess we're going to be touching on the nuclear, anti-nuclear movement, but how would you say protest songs in Aotearoa intersect with global protest movements, and what makes the New Zealand context unique?
Well, you know, one way they intersect is genre, I'll have to say. So, like, you know, some of the big genres for protest else, you know, across the world are hip-hop and reggae. Mm. And so, like, when those genres come here, New Zealanders will take the same genre, but then apply their own stories to it. But it also is a place, a chance for New Zealand music to be super specific. You know, mention New Zealand maunga, New Zealand cities, New Zealand stories. So, you know, because I remember, you know, even with early hip hop, people were saying, oh, you guys are copying America. But the songs were so local in what they talked about because that's what the genre was kind of made for. The genre and hip hop was made for people to mention their town, their street. So New Zealand hip hop was never going to sound like American hip hop. So, you know, and then with this nuclear issue we're talking about, my gosh, that was so global. So it was about the Pacific, which, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of Pacific people here living in Aotearoa. And the French, you know, some of it was targeted at the French, but a lot of people were doing this. They were, like, testing their nuclear bombs. They said it was absolutely safe, so don't worry about it. But it's so safe, we're not doing it in our backyard. We're doing it across the planet on the Pacific. But don't worry, bro, it's all good. Yeah, it ended up having this really broad regional and international significance. I mean, because later there was the French bombed a Greenpeace boat here. Like, I mean, you know, this was huge international incidents, you know, and almost, let's say, you know, on brink of war when they started to bomb things here in Aotearoa, you know, gosh.
Now, so I guess we're hitting the Herbs Nuclear Waste?
Sure, let's hit the Herbs. So this is reggae, as you can hear. So, you know, Bob Marley, you know, sent so many political messages through reggae. It was a natural vehicle.
Now, reggae and conveying political protest messages, why do you think this certain genre was so prominent at certain times, especially like in the 80s?
Well, I guess for Pasifika and Maori folks here, you know, coming through on the radio, oh, wow, here are some black people, you know, we might not see represented in the New Zealand media, like the newsreaders and some of the New Zealand television, New Zealand films were Pākehā people. And so this music came through. It was people that they felt looked more like them. And oh, my God, they're talking about some of the same issues that we have, you know, protesting colonization, protesting big business. And so it was like the perfect vehicle for this this kind of protest, this issue for, you know, for the region, for Polynesia. One of their songs on the similar topic was called French Letter, you know, Letter to the French Government about their nuclear testing. Well, the radio thought the title was too scandalous and made them change it for radio. Because French Letter is also a euphemism for condoms.
Okay, pretty racy. Racist.
I know, because we shouldn't talk about that. That all changed after the AIDS crisis. Now we have posters everywhere. But yeah, scandalous French letter. But so yeah, herbs were comprised of Pacifica and Maori members. You know, a full band playing their instruments. Great harmonies. They ended up they had a lot of other hits long ago. Hey Papa, they joined up with Dave Dobbin and did the music for the Foot Flats movie, and had the big hit with Slice of Heaven. So I guess showing again that, you know, they can be a protest band, but they can still have mainstream success. And I feel like, you know, you're talking about the impact of New Zealand of protest music. New Zealand has allowed its music to do that. You know, it's embraced it. Embrace the radical, I guess.
What role would you say state institutions have played in either amplifying or trying to marginalize some of these protest songs? Do they ever face any opposition from the state, or would you say universities, etc., have embraced them?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one, because as we know, so popular music is circulated by record labels. And record labels want to make money, and you know, they're a business. And so that's one of the first gatekeepers that any music will get is, will a record label fund them and promote them? I mean, because it takes some money, right, to launch a song, and or it would have gigs. And so the first gatekeeper is a record label saying, no, we can't go here. And then the second big gatekeeper is radio. And so, and in New Zealand, radio does often rely on funding from the government, you know, whether in grants or it's actually a government station. And so, you know, the government can say, we don't want to play that. Now, there's other ways to circulate music. And now, of course, we all have online music. But before that, you know, there was maybe live gigs and trying to sell cassettes, you know. So, you know, it is risky, you know, having the state, if you're going to fully protest the state, because there are spaces, you know, where there's controlling gatekeepers, because, you know, so these guys took risk. And then the irony is, yeah, they became hugely successful. And like you said, they kind of became so much a part of the New Zealand mindset that now we can't imagine a New Zealand without these songs. And without these sentiments, you know, these protest sentiments. So somehow, you know, they got through the gates and, you know, they become a part of New Zealand. So I think New Zealand's always had kind of a slightly rebellious streak. I know, obviously, it's not rebellious or radical enough, you know, for some people, and it can be kind of mediocre. But there is a pride in being an outlier, being different, you know, sometimes going against the grain. And so, yeah, I think New Zealanders take pride in that.
Excellent. Now, we're making a jump over to hip-hop. We're going to hit Air 2 by Upper Hop Posse. Now, this is a blend of Te Reo Māori and speaks directly to colonization and Māori resistance. What made this song such a landmark moment in New Zealand's musical and political landscape?
Well, because they took a risk. They made it, as you said, they made it in Te Reo, which at that time, you know, that's a risk. Like, is radio going to play it? Also, we're going to be super political. They could have just done a happy, clappy hip-hop song, you know? And so the fact that this was, like, the first hip-hop single that kind of really came out here kind of then set the tone. It'd be as if N.W.A. was the first hip-hop ever in the States. Like, so this was, it set the tone that New Zealand hip-hop was going to be and could be so direct, so at the forefront, and be utilized for voices that often weren't heard on the radio or the media at all. It was mind-blowing, I think.
Kā ranga, rangatahi, whakarongo, whakarongo. We nā tamatoa, so we must like te ahi, don't get led astray by Babylon. Kia mo, kito Māori. There's a lot of people who think they're tough today, but Jesus lights it over, how would have blown them away? To whom we hear ki, he spreads to disgust. spike cutting down the flag pole. Ha, yo, Pocky killed Moldy in a matter fair all. So the court executed in a slaughter. It's a Moldy battalion in a World War II. Staunch on the battlefield, they've had many clues. Like Warner, nutting move from hill to a nine. Victoria Cross, so true, so strong. This Moldy was a fierce warrior. Strike fear in the hearts of Babylon soldier. Yeah, it's true, yeah, it's true. That's why I'm talking to you.
Is this also sitting within a global protest movement as well at the time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it came in on that sort of pro-black elements of hip-hop and hip-hop storytelling. And so they're telling stories of, like, Tato Puraha, different battles. Like, this is stuff that if you didn't learn it in school, we're going to teach it to you through hip-hop. And then they mentioned Babylon, which is comes from reggae and the Rastafarian understanding of culture and racism. And so they're linking in with that as well, because they used to be, apparently they started off as a reggae band, and then, you know, shifted to hip hop. So they still have a lot of reggae and Rastafarian, like the actual religion elements in their music. And so, yeah, it's directly linking to these sort of Black Power global movement, and then as well as the sort of reggae anti-colonial global movement.
Someone's just text through saying most hip hop is about saying F you to the man.
Yeah, and you know, hip hop definitely can do that. And there can be fun hip hop and there can be dance hip hop. But yeah, it's also then circulating, you know, these protest messages. And that's what's been so funny about popular music, you know, is that it has, you know, it has the money making and the fun element. But it's circulating. You know, you think of so many artists like Bob Marley that we've mentioned, Kendrick Lamar in hip hop, but you know, think about Bob Dylan, U2, Rage Against the Machine, even James Brown and Stevie Wonder. You know, like, it's just this protest and speaking to you know, issues of the day has come through pop music, and it's really cool to, I guess, sort of trace the New Zealand version of that and how New Zealand bands and artists are doing the same thing. And then listen to, well, what are they talking about? You know, they're talking about Maori history, they're talking about nuclear testing.
I think I'm cool, we'll speak the truth with a sense of rule. Yeah, rising inflation to me is a crime. It's sports politics, so don't mess with my
mind. Over the years in the band, they've had like 20 different people. So many other cool artists have gone through, like DLT, Tetamwana Rapley. You know, because anyone who's been in a band, you know, keeping a band going for decades, right? You know, can be complicated. So, yeah, so, you know, there's been so many cool people that have come across. And now Dean Hapata, the main rapper, his daughter's been in the band now for years. Like, that's how long it's been. We've got, like, a second generation in the band.
This would have been, I mean, at the time in the 80s, this would have been a huge challenge to the dominant national narrative, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, for this to, you know, then, you know, like, radio, what are they going to do? Going to play BFM, to be frank, was really huge. And because they would play it. You know, the other radio did not know what to do with it. Yeah, it was a massive sort of such a strong stance to take. I mean, what's the Māori? The word that a lot of Māori will use, the word staunch. It was really staunch, you know, to just, you know, this is our first hip hop song, da da da, you know, and you're like, wow, I guess we're gonna have to play it.
Excellent. Hey, Dr. Kirsten Zemke, thank you so much for this week's edition of Travelling Tunes. Great edition.
Yeah, happy New Zealand Music Month.
All right. Cheers, mate. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.